Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. In keeping with yesterday's show, which was a lot of fun, a little bit of a Christmas show, today we're going to talk about angels, miracles, and just some really fascinating aspects of humanity. Our guest is Sue Bikini. God, now you got me saying bikini. Hold on a second. It's going to be one of those days, Sue. You give me the pronunciation off air, and now all I can think of is bikini. Sue Pagini is our guest, and she knows what it's like to have been struck by lightning. Literally, folks, not figuratively. She also knows what it's like to have to move 32 times, survive cancer and a brain aneurysm, and be held up at gunpoint. Any one of those things might break the normal person, but our guest is here to talk to us about a different perspective. She also believes that she hears from angels and knows that they're around us all the time. Sue, thank you so much for joining us today.
Dave, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
What a remarkable life you've led to this point. You know, when the old saying is, God doesn't give us anything more than he believes we can handle, sometimes I think, God, you maybe overthink my potential a little too much.
Right. I think I volunteered for a little more.
Exactly.
Than I planned on. Right.
Now, was this all like within a cluster? Was this all within like a 10-year period? Or was this slowly spread throughout your life, these little gifts, if you will, that have been bestowed upon you?
Well, the lightning incident was over 40 years ago, and I had a near-death experience when that happened, and it's not something that anyone spoke about, so I had to keep that quiet for a very long time. And
That was the first one of these incidents? All right, talk to me if you would then, Sue, and we'll get to the rest of them. Talk to me about your life pre-lightning strike. What was your life like?
My life was really very mundane, if you will. I was a very young mother. I was about 28 years old. I had two small children. I was in a marriage that was not working. My husband was an Army captain, and we were stationed out in a very desolate area called Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And I was just a young mother trying to find her way and trying to make her family as happy as possible. But I really wasn't myself. And the lightning strike brought all of that to the forefront.
All right. And with that in mind, then, had you had any kind of thoughts or belief system in place prior to this lightning strike regarding life after death, the paranormal, angel, supernatural? Had any of that ever been a part of your life, or was this literally an awakening for you?
It had never been a part of my life. As a young person, I kept trying to find the right church, if you will, to go to. None of them resonated with me, so I was just non-denominational and went to church occasionally, much to the chagrin of my mother. But I did not have any spiritual bent, per se. The lightning strike, because it was so unique and awakening, if you will, brought me to where I wanted to know more about what this voice was, what was this about. And so through the ensuing years, I met other people, as the universe would have it. Other people are brought into your life to help you expand whatever knowledge and path you're seeking. And that's what happened to me.
We've got a theater of the mind coming up a little bit later on in the show, folks. And this is from my personal experiences. And it is an interesting angelic intervention and divine intervention Christmas miracle. So I hope you guys will enjoy that and hang in a little bit with us on the show to hear that, too. Let me hear about the day of the lightning strike. What could you tell me about your life on that day? Was it a hectic, chaotic day? Had you been asking for signs from the universe? I want to know just how literal maybe God took you in your approach. But what was that day like before the strike?
My former husband and I, and operative word now, of course, is former, were going up into the Huachuca Mountains on by motorcycle in order to look at Indian caves. And in southern Arizona, there are some pretty significant large hills, if you were, not so much mountains. So we drove the motorcycle up into that area, and we were still on the military base, and that would separate the state of Arizona from the military base of Fort Huachuca. So we were still driving up into the military base area, and I'll explain why that's important later. And we came to the caves, parked the motorcycle at the bottom of the hill, went up into the caves, and in Arizona in the summer, when they have what they call their rainy season, it's bright and sunny 1 minute, and the next minute it's torrential. So up until that time, it had been unbelievably hot and very dry. And we were in the cave not longer than 10 or 15 minutes looking at the hieroglyphics, and all of a sudden the rain started to come. And my former husband said, I've got to get out of here and get down this hill and get the motorcycle started before it gets drenched and we can't get out of here. So he ran out and he yelled to me, take your time, but get down that hill so we can leave. So I followed him out. He ran down the hill. He was a very big man, and he had was special forces, so he was very physically fit, and he got down the hill with no problem. And I started to go down the hill, and the rain was torrential, so it was coming at me sideways. I could not see or get my footing. The ground was so dry that it was just rivets of water coming down. So do you want the story of the actual lightning strike?
Oh, no, let's avoid that and just go straight to what you had for breakfast this morning. Yeah, Sue, do I want to know about the lightning strike?
Okay.
Yes.
I just don't want to preempt anything that you might have planned.
No. So you're in this. Now, can I ask one thing, just out of curiosity, sure. As kind of a throwback, thanks for giving me that opening. When you were looking at these hieroglyphs and these kind of pictographs that were left by the Native American culture, did anything about them strike you as interesting that day, aside from the fact that you were looking at these kind of ancient text or manuscript from a race that lived there? What was there anything else about it, anything else that stood out at all?
I think my feeling, if I go back into what I was feeling then, was how amazing this was and how ancient it was that we still could see in some form what took place centuries ago. And I think that is what stuck with me, and then the torrential rains came.
So all right.
I wasn't there very long.
All right. I was just curious. I didn't know if maybe there might have been some foreshadowing in that cave that you, upon reflection, could look back at and go, you know, it was interesting. We were looking at the story of, and then this happened.
No, most unfortunately, we didn't get that far into the scenario. But
all right, so your husband made it down the hill. He's safe. You're blindly going down with the side winds and rain just pelting you and blinding you through most of your journey down. What happens next?
Okay, so I'm trying to get down, and I'm falling because the rain was in gullies. It was just coming down so fast that you couldn't get your footing because the ground would not absorb it because it was too dry. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm on my back, or I'm sitting down actually with my legs trying to scooch down the hill, and I look up and I see this pole, and it was a fence that was separating Fort Huachuca and the state of Arizona. And I look up and I said, oh, my God, a pole. I'm going to grab that pole. And I pulled myself up to the top of the pole. And with that, the lightning struck the pole and through me. So it struck me, came through my right arm, across my body, and down my left leg. It has to have an entrance and exit point. So it threw me up in the air unknowingly. I had no idea that it did that. I didn't know that I was struck. I had no idea. So I was thrown up in the air, and the only reason I know that is because I came down with, I finally realized when I came to that my face was in the mud and I was lying straight down, with my face, my body prone. And before I came to, which means I must have lost consciousness, a voice came to me. And the voice said, you cannot leave now. You have to go back to the children. And with that, I saw in my mind's eye two pictures, one of my son on the left-hand side and my daughter on the right. He was 6, she was 4. And then the voice said, move your legs back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Move the energy back and forth. Keep the fire, and that was the term they used, keep the fire from reaching your heart. And so my legs went back and forth, and finally now I'm starting to come to a little bit, and I realize that I'm doing what the voice is telling me to do, and that's trying to pull my legs back and forth, so that the energy from the lightning would not reach my heart and I would have a heart attack. And with that, I come to, and my mouth and nose and everything is covered in mud and rain, and I'm freezing. I'm just freezing. And my husband then was down at the bottom of the hill, looked back up, and realized what had happened, because my clothes, in those ancient days, we were wearing polyester, and it was melting. And he could see the steam coming off of my body. So he ran back up, grabbed me, threw me over his shoulders, and got me to the motorcycle, and put my arms around his neck, and I was riding on the back, hugging onto his neck, and I said, what happened? What happened? He said, you were hit by lightning. And
now, did he witness it? Did you say, did he actually see the lightning strike take place?
I don't think so. I think he was too busy on the motorcycle and then looked back up to see where I was and realized what had happened, because he never said to me, I saw you get hit.
But he realized by the state of you and your clothing and the fact that your fine polyester outfit, good motorcycle outfit, by the way, not so much, Sue.
Not so much, honestly, not so much.
had melted. And just to give a little perspective on this, this is a direct lightning strike you took.
Right.
I had, when I was a teenager, I was maybe 15 years old, I was on my way to my buddy Phil Spazieri's house. It was torrential rain, and I'm moving up the streets pretty quickly, and there was a house that was being built, and the framing was up and everything, and a lightning strike hit the house about a block away. A block away, and it knocked me on my butt. It, bam, and that, I don't know if I was just standing in the right puddle of water when it hit, and it traveled or what, but that was a block away, and it physically knocked me down. I can't even imagine, Sue, taking a full strike from a lightning bolt and having it traverse through your body. Was that memory wiped from you? I mean, do you remember any of the sensation of that now as you look back, or do you just remember grabbing that pole and then waking up with a voice telling you what to do?
This is one of their... there is a physical therapist in Florida who's extremely well known, and I, off the top of my head, I don't remember his name. And when I was living in Florida at the time, I went to him and said, I'm having all these problems with my back and my left leg and so on and so forth, and I explained to him what had happened. And he asked me, he said, did you know it was coming? I said, no. He said, this is the only accident of all of the hundreds and hundreds of people I've worked with that they never know that it's happening. If you're in a car accident or you're a motorcycle accident, there is an instantaneous second or two that you know that you're in danger. But with lightning, you don't know. And when we got to a logging cabin, when my former husband and I got to this logging cabin, and it's amazing how these things show up in your life, we didn't know how he was going to get me down the hill because I was starting to go into shock from the cold and the event. And so he got me into the logging cabin. There was a fireplace unlit. He took some gas from the motorcycle. Two other guys showed up. How wonderful of them. They took their fresh clothes and helped my former husband put them on me and started a fire to get me warm in there. And they were able to call the ambulance from the major hospital, local major hospital, and the ambulance said, I don't know if we can make it up there. The weather is so bad, I don't know if we can traverse. It's all uphill for us. Sure enough, 45 minutes later, I'm hearing the sirens, and they did make it up. And so when I got to the hospital, there were maybe three or four doctors in the room with me, and they asked me all of these questions. And finally, I realized that the outcome was they wanted to know how I survived this, the same question you're asking. And I said, I don't know. I've never been struck by lightning before. And they said they had two young men who were mountain climbers who had been struck the month before, and both died. And they kept telling me again and again, and pretty soon you start to go, okay, this is really weird. How lucky I was. How lucky you are that you're still alive. So that really put me, I think, on a long trajectory of finding out what had happened, what was the voice, who was the voice, why did they use the word fire?
Now, did you feel that this voice, I guess in retrospect, do you feel that it might have been any type of interior monologue, your own self-preservation and, you know, survival instinct walking you through what to do? Do you really believe that it was divine intervention that was reaching out to you? Talk to us about that.
Okay. And that's my favorite part, by the way. When it originally happened, I just put it in the back of my mind thinking, I don't know what this was about, and I don't know why it happened. To my right, in my mind's eye, after I had seen the two pictures of my children, there was a foggy tunnel, like a tunnel, but a space to the right that I could have gone down. It was very peaceful, very lovely, but I didn't get a glimpse of it a lot because the voice came to me. And the reason I'm saying that it is a divine voice, if you will, I call it angelic messages, is because different voices with different intonation have come to me other times. And that's what my new book is about. And it's about these voices that have come that have, and two other instances, they saved my life. Again. So the interesting thing about all of this, and I've been through some other things like in 2016, that what I'm realizing now is that there is a huge message for humanity, and the message that is important for me to convey is that we are never alone. I don't want anyone else to have to go through a lightning strike or a brain aneurysm or being held up at gunpoint to realize that they're not alone. And I feel that it's my job to get the message out that there is a huge, gigantic, non-physical presence that is with us every single day, all the time. We just want to trust it and call on it. So when you have an issue of, did I put the right mascara on today, you may or may not get a response. But if you are in a life-threatening situation, which is what this book is about, call on them. Call on your angelic presences. Call on those that you believe in. It could be Jesus. It could be Buddha. It can be God. It can be any of the angelic masters, or it can just be help me, and which is what I came up upon, not knowing who came to me. But each of the voices that came to me, as I have said, were different. And it was as if the one that came to me for the lightning strike was from an ancient time. It was more female than the one that came to me when I was held up at gunpoint in New York.
Now, why do you specifically say from ancient time? What about it gives you that vibe?
They use the word fire. Why didn't they use the word electricity?
Right, but if they're an all-knowing, powerful spirit, and understand, I'm not trying to crucify you on this, but I'm just curious, if they're that kind of a powerful being, why wouldn't they know what this was to begin with? Why, or what the contemporary context of the word is.
That's what I'm saying, because the other messages, the two other main interventions that I write about and expect the extraordinary, had more modern terminology. This voice was like, you must go back to the children. You cannot leave now. You must go back to the children. Move your legs back and forth. Move your legs back and forth to keep the fire from reaching your heart. So the feeling I got was that this was a more ancient being talking to me. I don't know who that being was. I don't know. I just know that they are there. And they are truly there. And it's important that we believe of everything. In this season that we are in, it's important that we believe. And for me, my job is to let everyone know, and I have had so many naysayers ask me much more pointed questions than you have been kind enough to ask. Are you sure this wasn't your mind? I think you made up these stories. Nobody can have this many things happen to them in their lives. And I'm going, I look at it on this press release that you have, and I'm going, wow, this is really weird. But you don't think of it when it happens to you. You just go, well, it's one more thing that I have to overcome. It's one more thing that I have to address. It's one more thing that I have to learn from. And you just pick up yourself and you keep going.
Right. So it's interesting in the way that you elect to look at it and perceive the issue. Instead of letting the issue run you, you just look at the issue and what can I take from this? Which is a massive lesson people need to learn, especially in today's society where we seem to wear our victim shields like a badge of honor. And instead of taking what happens to us and learning from it, becoming stronger from it, so many people are folding and just allowing it to dictate, well, I was able to, I abused that person because I had this happen to me, or I was hateful and hurtful to this person because that happened to me. And instead of looking for excuses for why we do the things we do or react the way we react, we're looking at you're looking at what can I get from this so that I can lead a better life. When you got struck by lightning and survived it, how quickly did that put you on a journey? Because I know a few people who have been struck by lightning and nothing about their life has changed. And I don't mean that rudely, but they didn't have any grand awakening. They were just like, man, yeah, I got struck by lightning. How weird is that? And they're the same person they were that day when they got struck by lightning. How quickly did it put you on a path to a different life?
It didn't. It wasn't quick.
That interesting?
Right. It was back to humanity. It was like it slowly seeped. And remember, too, that your friends that may have been struck, by the way, once you've been struck, you're 9 times more likely to get struck again.
Wait, how is that possible? I thought they always say lightning never strikes twice. I know that's kind of
that's an old
wives' tale, if you will. But how does that make you? Because now you're charged.
Yes.
Really?
Exactly what it is. Have you ever heard of a doctor and a double PhD by the name of Mona Lisa Schultz out of Boston?
I have not.
Okay, fascinating woman. She'd be a wonderful interview for you. She's also a medical intuitive, highly, highly respected as a medical intuitive. So in my days, this was many years later, I would say 15 years or more after the lightning strike, I was starting to really think about what had happened to me and where this voice had come from and what was this all about. And I had my first reading with a medium, a psychic. I'd never had that before, and I found that to be interesting. It wasn't life-altering, but certainly very interesting. And then as I was doing all this research here and there, the universe would bring me people and opportunities, and if I was smart enough, I'd hop on it and learn from it. So Mona Lisa Schultz came into my purview, if you will, and I called her, and I got a reading from her. And she scans your body, which is something I have learned to do because I graduated from an institute called the Stillpoint Institute. Anyway, she scans your body while you're over the phone, and she goes through your brain and your heart and all the organs and so on. She said, everything looks great except one thing. And I went, oh, boy. And she said, does anyone in your family have a neurological problem? Do you have a neurological problem? Parkinson's, anything at all? I said, no, no neurological problems in our family. And she said, it looks as though you put your finger in a light socket. And I said, bingo, I have. She was thrilled because energetically in her mind, she had never seen that before. She hadn't met anyone who had been struck by lightning and survived and had called her. So I was thrilled to get that information and thrilled to have her be excited about it. But there are many people who are investigating who we are beyond the physical world. Another wonderful person to interview, if you ever want to, is PMH Atwater. She is unbelievable in the research that she's done with 4,000 people who have had near-death experiences.
Right.
And what
we've had her on, yeah.
Oh, you have, all right.
Yeah, a number of years ago, yeah.
Well, I just interviewed her 3 weeks ago for my next book, and it was a fascinating afternoon, just fascinating. So,
and just so people know, you do have a book out right now, and it's also on Audible. Expect the Extraordinary, Angelic Messages, Spiritual Encounters, and Soul of Sky. And we will put a link up to that on our Killer Deals page so that you can find that. And if you want to find any of the books or any of the things we mentioned on the show, plus some of the other cool swag that Tim and I have hand-selected, just go to darknessradio.com, click on the Killer Deals link, and we'll have all of the books added on that page for you, so it's very easy to find and extremely easy to purchase. And then a small percentage of every sale goes to help our show and the administrative costs, streaming costs, and everything to make it as commercial-free as we can and continue to make the show free for you. So go check that out for yourself at darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link to get all that information, and you'll see our entire Amazon page that we have put up for you. When is the next book due out?
I don't know yet, Dave. That's a good question. I'm getting a lot of pressure to get on with it. It's probably going to be within the next 6 to 9 months. I'm just doing the research for it right now. I'll give you a little bit of a heads up because it has a lot to do with what we're talking about now. It has to do with being a human bridge. It's called bridging. And everyone is a bridge. Every one of us bridges onto something. Mm-hmm. It's where we take our passion. It's where we do the work that we do. It's how we express ourselves with others. And that was my reason for interviewing PMH Atwater. She was fascinating. And so that'll be what the next book is about. And is it thrilling and exciting? And so I think if we get back to let's talk about how we view this after you get through all of this and after you go through these events in your life. If you say to yourself, what am I supposed to be learning from this? What happened? Why did this happen to me? You know, this isn't fair. This isn't right. But if we flip the coin and we go, oh, this is about learning. So I have a premise that I work from, and it's called, what does my soul want me to do with this? The soul is always about expansion. It's always about going out beyond where we are, learning more than what we think we're capable of, experiencing more, creating more. That's what the soul wants, because the broader we are as humans here, the more expanded we are, the more expanded the universe becomes. And here's what that means. That means love and peace. That means love and peace. And we become bridges for love and peace the more expanded we are. Does that make any sense, or am I getting too esoteric here?
No, I'm with you. I completely understand where you're going.
Okay, good, because sometimes I get on these jags and I wonder, ooh, did the audience catch any of that?
No, yeah, well, and we're on the same page with it. And that's why I'm always interested to see how people start to look at this. And isn't it curious, why does Sue Pagini have these experiences and this sets her life into this course? And somebody else could have a very similar strain of circumstances, maybe not exactly in the same kind of order, but they'll have a bunch of misfortunes befall them and they just allow their lives to collapse. That's a strange aspect of who we are in human development. Why do you think that we're so apt to look at the negative instead of looking at, man, I made it through that? You know, that's what I've always tried to look at. It's not the things that knock us down that define us. It's how we get back up and how we get back into the game. That's what defines who we are as humans.
Well, the whole, in my mind's eye, and the work that I've done, and so we're looking at 40 years of research with some very gifted people here and in Europe. My feeling is that, first of all, for you and the audience, I am a firm believer in reincarnation. I don't think we can get it all done in one lifetime, and that just comes from me. It was something that I researched as a senior in high school, believe it or not. I was fascinated. So you asked me, was I on any path before I got struck by lightning? And so, bingo, maybe I was. Because as the senior teacher put all of these topics on the board, the thing that interested me, that jumped out at me, was reincarnation. She said, find something you've never heard about before. So I am a believer that we have multiple lifetimes because we can't get it all done at once. So if we have multiple lifetimes, how do we know how we're going to make each lifetime better? So my feeling is this. I feel that we stand in front of this wonderful group of presence. I call them angelic presence on the other side. And you put your hand up and they say, Sue, what are you going to volunteer for this next life? And you go, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have a brain aneurysm, and I'm going to get struck by lightning, and I'm going to get held up at gunpoint, and I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And I'm going to come through all of that. And then I have a message to give. And I don't know if that, now that I'm looking back on it, I am guessing that that's what I did. I think that I volunteered for this. I think we all volunteer for it. We volunteer to grow and expand. And if we look at it as, woe is me, I've been hit down again, instead of, okay, what do I need to learn from this? How do I need to expand with this? What portion of my life don't I know enough about, whether it's financial or a job or career opportunity or your health? Every one of those things needs for us to look at it and say, how can I expand on this? What can I learn about this? And as I've said to my husband several times, don't ever give up. There's always an answer. That's what we lose, I think, as human beings. We don't feel that there's always an answer. There's always an answer. So when I had the brain aneurysm, which was last year, I'm in the hospital getting ready to go into another exploratory thing, and they said to me, the surgeon comes in and says, Sue, we're going to be ready for you in half an hour. I said, not yet. I have to talk to my spiritual mentor, and then I'll be ready. This guy was so wise, he said to me, okay. So I called her, and I said, I can't believe this is happening. She's in the book, by the way. She's amazing, Ardell Anderson. I can't believe this is happening to me. She said, don't you blame anybody. It's not about that. You volunteered for this. You raised your hand and you said, I'm going to do this. So
now there are a lot of people out there that hear that. And then they shake their head and they say, Sue, there is no way I chose to be molested by my father, to be abused by my mother, to be burned by my grandfather, to, you know, to be shot and paralyzed. There's no way I chose that. There's just no possible way. How do you get through to somebody on that level? Because let's face it, that is a bitter pill to swallow. The idea that we chose the life we're in and the roadblocks that we're confronted with. How do you walk somebody through that? Because, you know, it's devastating. I've had people very upset with me when I've mentioned that. Yeah, you know, we're here. We've selected the life to learn the lessons, and they just have a very hard time with that.
Well, I did too. I said, there's no way after everything else I've been through that I would have put my hand up and say, I'll take a brain aneurysm next week. I mean, there's just no way. And she said, well, you did. It doesn't just happen. There are no coincidences. Here is what I want to tell your audience. There are, because I'm a transformational life coach after I've been in corporate America for a long time, I have a lot of clients that come to me, women who have had abusive relationships or abusive childhood situations. We come in, we didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for this when I was 4 or 5 or whenever. We come in with love in our hearts as children. And we are so hoping from a soul point of view that we are going to be able to change and help this parent or this person. But it frequently doesn't happen. We have volunteered for that. I don't know why. I don't know why we have volunteered to give up our life like this young 3-year-old child. I don't know that. But that is a contract that she has with her maker. So we each have our contracts when we volunteer to do the things that have happened to us. That's the best that I can say. I certainly don't feel, when I look back on it, that I volunteered for lightning or the amazing, I need, before we get off today, I just want to tell you a little bit about the New York experience, because that's even more exciting than the lightning experience.
Oh, no, we want to hear them all. We've got a lot to cover. And I'll tell you what, we'll do that. We've got so much more to cover. But right now, it's time to turn to our Darkhives with a brand new theater of the mind. This, from my own life, this is the Doggone Christmas Miracle on Theater of the Mind. Sadness had filled our house for weeks, ever since the death of our family dog, Cagney. Our young son, Nathan, missed Cagney, and so did we. The loss was so hard on us that we agreed to buy a new puppy, a Basset Hound, for Christmas. When I brought the puppy home, I had Nathan with me as well as a friend and his son. As soon as I got to the door, I realized I'd forgotten to pick up the house key when we left. The door had locked behind me. I didn't know what to do. It would be several hours before my wife returned from work. The weather was near freezing, and the two young boys had become very restless. I tried each door of the house and every window, but nothing budged. The only thing left to do, I said to myself, is to break a window in the garage. The others got back inside my car, and I went around to the back of the garage. I tried to push open the back window, but it was locked from the inside. Reluctantly, I reached down, I grabbed a stone from the garden, and I struck the window as hard as I could. Nothing happened. As I repeated the action 2 more times, the window refused to break. Exasperated, I looked to the sky and called out, "Okay, God, if you have a better plan, I'm listening." I set the stone down, pushed on the window, and to my amazement, it swung open. How did that happen, I wondered. I crawled inside and raced through the house to the front door to let the others in. Once we were inside, I returned to the garage to check the window damage. I was sure the latch had torn free from the sill. I reached the window and tried to open it. Again, it wouldn't budge. I went outside and I pushed. The window stubbornly refused to yield. I returned to the warmth of the garage and I inspected the window, still unable to understand how it had just swung open for me only moments earlier. And now it was shut and locked again, with no damage to the glass, the latch, or the framing. I shrugged and smiled and just thanked God before I joined the others in the living room. Within minutes, the puppy sniffed around as if looking for a place to go to the toilet. I carried him to the back door and let him out on the deck. Right then, my son also needed his diaper changed. Just about the time I finished changing the diaper, I heard loud yelps from the deck. They were yelps of pain. I left Nathan with my friend. I ran to the deck, threw open the back door. The puppy had fallen off our second-story deck and had landed on the concrete ground below.
He lay there, whining and crying out in pain, but he wasn't moving. I hurried down and I lifted the puppy into my arms. Sad wails came from him whenever I moved his little body. His poor body had been curved backward like a crescent moon. I wrapped him inside of a bath towel and I called the emergency vet clinic. "Bring him in. We'll be ready for him." That's what they told me. As I drove toward the animal hospital, my mind buzzed with anxiety. How could this possibly happen? We had already had so much loss earlier this year with the passing of Cagney. Money was tight, and I began to imagine just how expensive the vet's emergency bill would be. My stomach soured at the thought. I knew we couldn't afford the added expense, especially at Christmas time. "Hey, if you're listening, I really need your help here, Lord. We suffered so much this year with losing Cagney. We can't afford the expensive visit to the vet. So would you heal this puppy or take him now and just end his suffering?" The whole ride there, the puppy whined softly and cried. In various ways, I continued repeating that prayer, but with the same intent. And as I did, the pup began to quiet and eventually slumped. He just lay still. Tears began streaming down my face as I faced the realization that my brand new puppy just died in my arms. I got out of the car. I didn't care that the tears slid down my cheeks. I hurried into the animal hospital. The staff greeted me. The doctor silently took the swaddled dog from my arms and laid him on the counter. Quietly, he unwrapped the little guy. And all of our astonishment, the puppy sprung up and let out a playful, "He's alive!" That's all I could say for several seconds. We looked at one another quizzically before one of the doctors began examining the puppy. I don't feel anything broken, but we need to x-ray it just to get a better assessment and see if there's any internal bleeding, he informed me. Two doctors and the nurse scurried back and began working. I talked at length with the receptionist and explained to her the tragedy we had already dealt with earlier this summer and how that stretched our finances and how much more our finances were stretched here with the Christmas holiday impending. I told her of the events of the evening and how it transpired. Just then, the doctor called from the OR. She excused herself and left the room. Tension flowed through me. I was certain that they'd found internal damage and the surgery would be required. I didn't know how we were going to pay this bill. The team returned to the front of the office with our newest family member happily licking and nipping at the doctor's hands. Smiles covered the faces of the staff. "I understand this has been a hard year for your family," the senior doctor said. "Tonight, we're all part of a real Christmas miracle. Your puppy is living proof, and we found no damage." I took our little dog and I grinned as I petted him. "May I ask the little trooper's name?" he asked. I hadn't gotten around that far, as we just arrived home when things went terribly wrong. "Well, how does the name Lucky sound to you?" he smiled as he petted the dog. The staff members and I laughed heartily. Considering the circumstances of the night, I agreed that was a pretty good name. "I can't thank you enough for the kindness you've shown me tonight. I still have one more thing to handle, though. How much do I owe you?" There was a long pause. Then smiles broke out across the room. "You know, we discussed that in the back room. None of us feel comfortable charging you. I mean, it seems that God was the one who did the work on this little fella." My eyes began to fill with tears, and I thanked them again and again, and I hugged each one of them. I knew that God had been with us that day, first by letting my family in and out of the cold, and now by healing my dog. Merry Christmas, and I want you all to know that we wish you and your family a much better new year. That's what the receptionist called out as I walked out of the door. And that lucky miracle ended our year on a very high note.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the show. Kind of an inspiring show today. A way to look at life through the eyes of death and challenges. How do we stand up once we get knocked down again? Sue Pagini is my guest today, and she has lived through it all. Literally a lightning strike that hit her directly, melting the clothes on her body. She's had to move 32 times. She's a survivor of cancer, a brain aneurysm, and has been held up at gunpoint. And all of those experiences, as one could imagine, led to her living a life in a different way. And she's here sharing some of these insights with us and some of the miraculous changes. Now, do you feel, you were talking in the last segment about how we make these kind of soul contracts to choose these lives. Do you believe that we could jump that track in life, that we can say, all right, I've learned my lesson, or once we've committed that soul pen to paper and we've chosen our life path for that ride, we're stuck in that life path? Or how do you feel about that whole aspect?
You know, I've asked myself that question. When I had the brain aneurysm, I said, I've already been on a great path. I've already done a lot of spiritual work. Why would I need this? And here's what I came up with. The reason we have these events, and you probably could jump the track and not have them, if in fact something has happened previously that got you over that learning curve. Evidently, I didn't. But we are a mirror to each other. We teach each other. And so by being a mirror and going through certain events in our lives, if we take those events to help others, instead of saying, woe is me, then now we know what the purpose is. I'm going to mirror for everyone out there that you never give up, that you live fearlessly, that you go after every single opportunity that you want in your life. And it's just of such importance for every one of us to know that we have the right to have a passionate, fun-filled, great life, but it's up to us to get on the path. It's not just going to be dropped in your lap. So I don't know whether or not I could have jumped any of these events. In some ways, and I've interviewed a lot of cancer patients, they have all said almost to a person, I would never have had it any other way. What they have learned from that, the resilience, and look at it, the grit that they have learned through those events helps them help themselves to then help others through similar situations. All I have to do is look at St. Jude's commercial on TV. And I look at these children who are fantastic on that commercial. And it makes me feel you have such a fabulous message. Where the rest of us are sitting around whining, you're out doing good. You're out telling everybody, it's okay if I don't have legs. It's okay if I have to breathe through a tube. I love life. So I think that the events that we go through are to help mirror to our other human beings and our human family that they can get through whatever tough situation they have as well, because that's what you're doing. You're getting through it. So perhaps we can jump the track if something else has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see, I haven't jumped it yet.
Well, the lightning strike didn't change your paradigm. It certainly opened you up a little bit, but it didn't send your life off in a radical new direction. You said that earlier. Okay.
Right.
All right. So with that in mind, then, at what point did how many tragedies had to befall you? And maybe I'm using the term tragedy incorrectly, because in your sense, it almost sounds like how many of these opportunities came to you before the light went on?
Bingo. They are opportunities. I call them events. Only because if I look back on them, they were an event. They didn't have any energy plugged into them anymore. They were an event for me to work from, to learn from, to pick up and read about. They were not going to put me down a rabbit hole. So the next event that really changed my life and really got me totally on this path was when I had already divorced my first husband. I was walking down the street in New York City, Madison Avenue, at 8:20 at night in early October. So it was beautiful. People were out getting ice cream with their children. I was walking with Bob. He and I were walking together, and we were holding hands. We were now engaged. I've been divorced for many years. He had been divorced. We were now engaged, and we were walking around 85th Street on Madison, if anyone is familiar with that. We weren't paying attention. I didn't have my glasses on. I'm nearsighted, so I don't see peripheral vision very well without my glasses. So coming up behind us were two men, and they pushed us over to, we were in front of the Campbell Funeral Home, and they have a fence, a black wrought iron fence, and these two men pushed us up to the fence, and they said, don't make a sound. Don't move. Give us all your money and all your jewelry. And there were two of them. I call them the tall guy and the short guy. The short guy had the gun. His hand was shaking. Not a good sign. So we backed up. Bob got his wallet out. I opened my purse, my bag, to give him my wallet. And there was, I had a new, given to me that night, a new necklace with a diamond in it. He said, give me that necklace. And Bob said, it was a gift. You can have all my money. Don't take the necklace. He reached over, tall guy now, reached over, grabbed the necklace on my neck, yanked it off of me and said, started laughing and said, I'm going to give it to my mother for safekeeping. With that, a voice comes to me again. This time, very different, more male-like. It was very directive. And it said, fall on your knees. Tell them you are pregnant, which I wasn't. Tell them you are pregnant and that you're going to start throwing up. I did exactly what the voice said. Fell on my knees, and this guy, the tall guy now, short guy, has still got the gun, but he's shaken, and he's not in charge. Tall guy's in charge. Looked like tall guy was training short guy. So he said to me, lady, we're going to blow your brains out if you're lying. I said, I'm pregnant and I'm going to vomit. I'm going to throw up. And with that, I put my head down and started coughing. Well, Bob looks over at me. He's on my right and he says, Sue, not now. Doesn't matter. It broke the momentum. Those two guys didn't know what to say. And I said, then you'll have to blow my brains out because I'm not getting up. I'm pregnant. I'm going to be sick. And the two guys kind of looked at each other and said, well, we have everything we need now. So we're out of here. And they turned around laughing. Now they're walking across Madison Avenue, which is the high rent district in New York City. And they're walking over to Fifth Avenue, which is the next street over, which is where the Metropolitan Museum of Art is. And they're just sauntering. They're not doing anything. And I ran over to the nearest restaurant. People are looking at us, by the way. The two guys turned around, and they realized that everybody else on the other side of the street on Madison Avenue had stopped, and they were looking at these two guys. So I run over, call the police. Bob takes after the two guys so that he doesn't lose them. He takes off his jacket so isn't quite as noticeable. And the police come, and they're coming the wrong way, I guess, up Fifth or down up Fifth. So they're up Fifth Avenue. They hop on the grass to corner these guys in the police cars, and they get the guys. And the reason that the story is so significant is because they had, the month before, killed two doormen on the west side of New York City because neither one of those men had enough money. So that was the voice that really propelled me into, okay, this is not a joke. This is the real stuff. This is the real deal. Now you, Sue, go out and find out what this is about and why these voices are coming to you.
Well, first of all, what did Bob say to you when he came back and wanted to know how long you've been pregnant and hadn't told him?
He just said, what in the were you doing? Were you thinking? And I said, you're not going to believe this. Now, he knew the lightning story.
Right.
And he was pretty open-minded. And I said, you're not going to believe this. But this voice came to me, and this is what it said. So he was so overwrought the police came to us the next morning. They asked us to come down to the station. We were afraid of retribution if these guys were part of a gang. You know, you all these things run through your mind. We've seen too much TV, and particularly since he was with one of the major networks in the city. We just went on with our lives after that. It totally changed mine, though. Now I was on a spiritual quest, and I was going to be seeking out why these voices came to me and what it was all about.
So, Sue, I need to ask then, Sue Pacini, why of all the people on planet Earth do you believe you've been given the tests, the experiences you've been given? Why not Donald Trump? Why not Barack Obama? Why not somebody that is of massive sphere of influence that could come forward and say, listen, this is what happened, and millions of people would listen around the world all at once?
Because that's not their path. I am just like any other woman walking in this country, or any country, for the most part. I'm not an exalted member of Congress or the media or anybody else. I'm just like Mary Jane Smith down the street. I'm a wife. I'm a working woman. I'm no different from anyone else. And that's why I've taken this mantle on, or that's why I do what I do, because I'm like everyone else. And my job is to get the message out that you do not have to go through, anyone does not have to go through what I've been through, in order to live your life in the greatest freedom possible. Be all you can be. And this is what the message was. Be all you can be, Sue, and show others to be all they can be. Live your life. Over the years, I've learned this. There are two questions we're going to be asked when we cross to the other side. The first question is, did you make a difference? And the second question is, did you have joy? So every day when I get up, I have 5 horses to take care of here. Every day when I get up, they are my joy. I go in and I see those sweet faces, and they give me kisses, and I give them kisses, and that's my joy, along with my dogs and my husband. And I hope
I like that the husband came in after the horses and the dog. Oh yeah, and my husband. I'm sure he's very happy about that positioning in life. But
I'm afraid that's what he feels too. And I keep trying to say no, but he says that's not the way it's coming out, honey.
That's when you turn to him and you go, "Hey, honey, you chose that life path. You chose the life path.
you chose me, darling. You knew what you were in for.
The soul contract said you were going to come in the top, but slightly below the horses and my puppy. Then, but you're still in there, honey. You're three here. Is not a bad place to be.
Now,
don't keep harping on me, or you're going to slip to fourth or fifth place, and I don't want that to happen.
Right. Well, it's the only thing I want for everyone that I get a chance to speak to, either through the book or through your terrific show, be willing to take chances in your life. Don't sit on the fence. Don't take your life for granted. Go out and do new things. Go out and do the things that you wanted to do but always were afraid to do. Live a fearless life. Because the one thing you don't want, and I have a whole chapter on it in this book, about don't end your life with regrets. And that, to me, is the most thing that drives me. Will I regret not doing this when it comes my time to cross over the bridge?
That's a great life lesson. Yeah, that's an amazing life lesson. And I can honestly say, looking back on my life, it was in those moments when I took that shot and I said what was in my heart, or I did what was in my you know, head from the voice that was there telling me this is your time. And I look at the brass rings that I've grabbed, whether it be the amazing wife I have now or the radio show or TV opportunities or the books or things with my children. And I look at the success I've had because I didn't shy away from the possibility. And that has set my life on a different direction and gives me an opportunity to share. And what's been fascinating to me about doing this show, and not trying to make it sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but Tim and I have talked about this repeatedly over the years. You know, we're open, and we've always been very open about our lives and my depression and anxiety and different aspects of Tim's life and medical conditions. And we continue to pull through, and you think it's kind of a throwaway remark or comment that you make here or there, and then you get these emails and people approaching you at conventions and live events telling you how they had their finger on the trigger, and then they heard that episode. And you're like, really? I didn't even, yeah, but you don't tell them, really? I didn't even mean that aspect, or I didn't, you know, I wasn't even thinking that that was the message that I was conveying. But you realize just how deeply, if you do something that you love and you do it with passion and you're open and you are who you are and use the format that you have, you can change lives.
Yes.
And that's been one of the most humbling parts of my life. And then I sit back and I think, how many times did I hear the angel voices? How many times did I respond to it thinking that it was my own clarity of mind or something else, and then realize, you know, why did I wake up today and make a post about suicide or make a post about my own depression and anxiety? Why today? And then I get 100 emails finding out why today. And it wasn't me. Something nudged me into that direction, that out of the blue, I did this. And I think it's important that when you feel those moments, you feel a calling to accept that challenge. And that's what it sounds like you've turned your life into, is accepting these challenges, great and small, and making the best of every one of them, so that when you face your maker, whoever that may be, whatever that may be, you can hold your head up. And I've often thought of that too. You know, I mean, if I were to drop dead right now, God says, hey, how did you spend the last 5 minutes of your life? Do I want to say I was slumped on the couch watching The Walking Dead? Or do I want to say, you know, I just got done posting about my own suicide thoughts and how I changed in this, you know, it, or I spent time cuddled with my children or, you know, holding hands with my wife. I want it to be the moment so that when it's my time and God goes, how did you spend that last 5 minutes? I'm not putting my head down going, well, I was looking for a McRib sandwich at one of the McDonald's locally. I want it to have a little bit more impact and feeling, which is what it sounds like you're saying. You believe those are kind of the questions that we will face. Only I like yours are a lot more grand scale. You know, have we done anything to make a difference? I like that instead of just my pigeonhole. What did you do in the last 5 minutes of the gift I gave you? So that's an interesting aspect. And you think, you believe we all have angels around us. And this is important this time of year. Whether it's real or a misnomer, and I've heard different sides on this, that depression is so much worse this time of year around the holidays, and people feel more despondent or alone than ever because they're, you know, away from family or friends or so on, and that puts them into these dark spots. So give our listeners a few takeaways. What can they do to reach their guides, their angels, and hear those voices and get those messages? What can we do to tune out the static and tune in the frequency of our angels?
Happy to do that. The most important thing is you have to be quiet. You have to have a quiet space, someplace where you can go. Out in nature is usually the best if you can do it that way.
And my listeners are laughing across the planet. I am an avid indoorsman, so I'm totally screwed. Okay, but no, if you say outdoors is kind of a good way to do that.
Is good because now you're connecting with Mother Earth,
right?
On at your feet and Father Universe at your head. So now you're connecting in the best way possible. So what you want to do is you want to bring down that energy that's out there around you through your body, and the best way to do that is to be out in nature.
You mean the reason I'm not getting my messages is because of the stupid popcorn ceiling I have above my head, Sue?
I'm afraid it's not going to make it through that silly Dave.
Stucco and aluminum siding are screwing my life up. All right, good. So I'll get outside. Yeah. You connect with the nature, and then
Right.
And then how do we talk to them? And should, you know, here's the other point, and I'll shut up and let you answer the entire thing, is how do we connect? How do we get past the guilt of feeling like we're always asking for help, which is something that I've had to live with as well. I'm always like, you know, you hear, well, you just need to ask. And then I feel like, yeah, I don't want to be like, hey, God, by the way. You know, I always feel like I'm tapping Dad on the shoulder, irritating him. How do we get past
that?
That's
what you're supposed to do. No. That's what you're supposed to do. That's their job. They're sitting, the angelic realm, for me, okay, I can only talk about myself, sits on the right-hand side. They sit all over by my shoulder on the right-hand side. And when I want an answer to something, the answer comes just like it did when I was struck by lightning or gunpoint or whatever. It comes very staccato. It's very black and white. It has no ego involved. It has no emotion involved. It is the answer to a question. Then you know that it comes from another realm. Their job, they love their job. Their job is to help humanity. If you don't ask, you cannot receive. And their job, now we're going to get into even a larger picture, which is too much for this particular hour. Let's talk about the law of attraction. Let's talk about manifestation. Their job is to give you what you most desire, but you got to really desire it. So that's their job. There is no guilt involved. You are giving them a job when you ask a question for help. And that's what they want. That's what they want. I'll tell you one other short little story. When I wrote my first book, it was a book for women. It's called Bootstraps, again available on Amazon. And I couldn't find a title. I work from when I write, I get a title, and then I fill in around the title. Couldn't get that title. So I put a couple of things up on my computer in the subject bar at the top. I went away and had my lunch. I came back, and there was another title up there. It wasn't the title I had put in there. And I went, huh? Then I looked down at the manuscript portion, and they had added another title that I didn't know anything about, never heard of before. So I knew, and I could feel them laughing over my right shoulder. Look, we made her so excited. And so I know that they're there. Because when you look for small miracles, that's them playing with you. That's them helping you grow. That's them keeping you from suicide. That's them keeping you from being depressed. That's them helping you have a fabulous Christmas and helping you, most importantly, more than anything, is to live from your heart. So when you have those children crawl up in your lap, that is all about heart expansion. And you feel it. It feels like your heart is going to jump out of your chest. I have 6 children and 12 grandchildren. Every time I have a little person come near me, my heart just starts going wacka, wacka, wacka. I love children and animals. Their energy is so pure. And that's what they're there for. They're there to make a difference in other people's lives and for them to grow and learn as well. So the angels are always there. They are always there. I'm going to throw one more little thing out.
Yeah, please. And I'm not trying to be too silent for you, but it's just, you know, I'm soaking it in as well, because there's a lot of times that, you know, even as the host of the show and hearing the things I've heard over the last 12 years, going on 13 years, sometimes I need that gentle shake and reminder as well, because you face these moments in darkness and in despair and depression and anxiety, and the world is plunged into that right now. Unfortunately, there is so much upheaval, so much unnerving, whether you're talking about raging fire surrounding you where it looks like Armageddon in California, to right. Constant news barraging you of how North Korea now has missiles that are very capable of hitting all parts of America, or what has our president done today, and people are reacting one side or the other, and there's all this hatred and vitriol, and we get lost in this quagmire of gunk that sometimes we need to shut up and listen. We need to hear the voice. So whether it's the interior monologue of the angel speaking to us, or it's the voice of Sue Pagini on Beyond the Darkness. Maybe this is something that, you know, not maybe, I think this is something that's important for people to hear, to kind of reawaken the possibilities that if you give this over, there's no harm, there's no foul. It's not like we're asking you to slit your wrist and give blood to, you know, God. What we're asking you to do is listen and try things and see if they work in your life. See if this will make a difference in your life and in the life of the people and animals and spirits around you.
Right. And it's the whole concept is about trust. Trust and belief. And there's no better way to learn that than working with 1,200 pounds in a horse. If the horse doesn't trust you, goodbye. You have no business being around that animal. But when I, and then, these are all such weird experiences, but if it helps your audience, I gotta voice them.
Please.
When I had this brain aneurysm, I was talking on a radio show just like I'm talking to you. I was being interviewed. And I was right in the middle of the interview. We were about halfway, half an hour into the hour. And great interview. And then all of a sudden, there's this white light that comes across this front pasture where the horses are. And it's coming across the front pasture. And I said, what is that? And I'm not saying it out loud, but, you know, at any rate, it was my brain opening up to this aneurysm. And let me just give you the long and the short of it. I was where the aneurysm was, because it was a ruptured aneurysm, was over my right ear in a very difficult location, evidently. I was one of 15 people in the last 25 years that has survived this. I was told by the surgeon, the neurosurgeon. And I thought that I didn't know if I could go through any more. I have to tell you that honestly, because I hadn't eaten for 3 days because they kept saying, you're going to be next, you're going to be next. And so they couldn't feed me. So when I finally got on the table for the last procedure, for them to put the coil in over my right ear, there were 12 angels or more, small, tiny, small angels. Everything was in white. And there was a great, big, tall man on my right-hand side, also in white. Again, on the right-hand side. That's your connection, folks, is that right-hand side. And they said to me, we have you. And that was all I needed to know. Because I was on the cusp of deciding to leave. So I want to tell your audience that coming back is always a struggle. Coming back from the lightning was a physical and emotional struggle. I lost all the feeling in the left-hand side of my body. I had to bring it back. Coming back from this brain aneurysm, I was in bed for 6 months. And I'm dealing with the repercussion of that right now. It is always worth it. Because when you go to the other side, there is one thing that you are lacking on the other side, and that's to be able to touch. You can hear voices, beautiful music, beautiful colors, but you can't touch. So that alone is worth your while staying. If you have any questions about leaving, or if you're so ill, you're wondering, it's the touch that you will greatly miss. If you leave before your time, if it's your time, then you're going to welcome it. And believe me, when you get to that door, that crossover, it is so peaceful, it is so relaxing, there is nothing to worry about. And I am working with my 96-year-old mother to help her understand that. But that's the last thing I really wanted to get across to the audience, Dave, is that so often when we come upon an event or an opportunity, as you said, that is close to the end of our life, that we can make a choice, because it's always about our choice. It's always about us making the choices we make, that the thing that you will lose, and not lose, but the thing that you will not be able to replicate over there is touch. So hug your family. Hug your friends, particularly in this season. Love them all. Live from your heart. Because your mind sometimes is just too busy. So if you live from your heart, you in fact will then be able to live the life that you most greatly desire, because your heart is where your intuition lives, and it will guide you on a very clean path.
Great message. Yeah, great messages, Sue, and what a life. I mean, to have survived and lived through all of the things that you've done, to see and face the challenges and still have the optimistic viewpoint that you do is fantastic, and it's a learning lesson for all of us. And I hope that people will check out your book, check out our link. Again, go to darknessradio.com, click on that Killer Deals link to find links for all of our guest books and information. And if you don't see it immediately, just check back the next day. We do try to update that page on a very regular basis. It's just fascinating to hear these kind of stories of change and life-altering decisions and how we choose to look at them. So I pray that for all of our listeners, that in this next year you learn to look at things differently. You learn to look at the things that are presented before you not as destructive challenges, but as new opportunities to seize and make something bigger and better of. And I know that's hard. Trust me, I've had my face ground in the dirt on many occasions where I felt like this is it. I don't want to go on anymore. But if I would have taken those opportunities, I would have missed the amazing 8 children that I have. I would have missed finding the love of my life and finally marrying her. I would have missed the amazing loves and cuddles I get from the cats and dogs that have been a part of my life. And I think of all the people out there that have rebounded back to me, telling me how listening to the show has impacted their life and changed their perspective, and how many things we would have influenced in our life would have not been changed if we weren't here doing what we were meant to do. So I pray for all of you that you get you don't get a lightning strike in the physical sense to knock you on your ass, but that something awakens in you and that you can turn the way you look at things and the problems that you have into new opportunities, and that we are so much more. We are so much more, and we are capable of so much more than we allow ourselves to be. So take that this year and make that the gift that you give to yourself, to give yourself that opportunity to change from within. And don't let the outside world influence you, no matter how much negativity is out there spinning, no matter how much darkness seems to be on the horizon. Remember, there's always light beyond the darkness, and you can find it there. And you just have to look within yourself and ask for the help. The angels are there, your guides are there, the universe is there. There is something listening. We just have to engage it and make it part of our life. And for the holidays, if you're interested, I've got a few left. I've got Paranormal Challenge, the complete Travel Channel miniseries that I was a part of, where Zach Bagans and I took 2 different paranormal teams into haunted locations across the United States, pitted them against each other to see how well they understood the electronics, the equipment, the history, and what they presented as real evidence of the paranormal. We've got that entire 14-episode set in 1 3-disc collection. I've got that available. I'll autograph for you. That's $30. You can get copies of my book, The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. You can email me for that as well. Those are only $10. Or you can get the pair for just $40 and save on shipping. So if you're interested, that's $40 total. That includes shipping, handling, and everything to the continental United States. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. We'll send you out an invoice and ship those out to you immediately. Have a great, safe, loving, happy weekend. And remember to really enjoy the time that you have this weekend, and call somebody that you may have forgotten about, somebody that you've been meaning to contact, email them, reach out to them, and change some lives this weekend. That's your homework for this weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Tim will be back. Supernatural News, Parashare, right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.